In 1754, in New York City, there was a college established. It was called King's College. They advertised for the new school in this way, quote, "The chief thing that is aimed at in this college is to teach and engage children to know God in Jesus Christ," end quote. Today, that college still exists. It's in New York City. Only King's College has now been changed in its name. Long, long ago, it was changed to Columbia University. But like virtually all the other early colleges in America, Columbia long ago abandoned its Christian roots. Well, fast forward to today, and there are about 5,000 Jewish students in that school, and they are at risk because of pro-Hamas demonstrations. A leading Jewish rabbi at Columbia encouraged the Jewish students to leave the campus for safety's sake. And, of course, often the unspoken aspect of this whole story is radical Islam. And tragically, this story is not just at Columbia University, although I think that's probably the worst single example at present. Yale University, we saw protests at Harvard earlier. It's in other places, too, as well as MIT. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Robert Spencer, who is a best-selling author on the whole subject of Islam and jihad and Sharia, he is the maintainer of the website, jihadwatch.org. We have the privilege to talk with him again. And Robert, I thank you so much. You are so such a scholar, and you've been following these things through the years. You and I have had discussions through the years, and now all these things that we see on our daily headlines, it's all things that you talked about years and years ago. The real key to understand is Islam and what are Islam's goals.
Absolutely, Jerry. This is the fruit of decades of indoctrination and propaganda. Our universities, of course, were taken over beginning in the late 1960s. The Marxists at that time spoke about the long march through the institutions whereby they would take control of the centers of information, the universities, the educational system in general, the media, and so on, and begin to allow only their point of view to be heard. That endeavor was extraordinarily successful, and it is now complete, and now we are seeing the bitter fruit of it at Columbia and other universities across the country.
Okay, and let's talk about specifically some of the things going on in Columbia itself, because apparently, I mean, people were camping out and so forth, and the school said, no, you can't do that, and they forcibly removed that and arrested a lot of people. But here's my big question. All of these things have happened after the October 7th, attack by Hamas. That's the worst thing that's happened to the Jews since the Holocaust in 1945 was the last time, you know, that they were dealing with all this. How can this be? What are these students thinking as they're protesting?
Well, you know, they've been taught that Israel is a settler colonialist apartheid state that has no right to exist, that it's on stolen land that belongs to the Palestinians. We should also remember that they've also been taught that the United States exists on stolen land. And if we think that that's not going to have any consequences, we're being naive. We're getting a foretaste of what is coming in this country on the university campuses today. I mean, in this country, street to street, house to house. And they have been taught all this Marxist agitprop, and this is what is animating their actions today. It's all false. It's based on lies. Israel is on land that it legally is entitled to. There is no occupation of Palestinian land. There never was a Palestine. In fact, the Palestinians themselves were invented in the 1960s. I should also clarify, though, before we go further, that when I say there never was a Palestine, I mean as an independent Arab state. Palestine was always the name of a region, and it was never the name of an ethnicity or a people up until the 1960s, when the Palestinians were invented by the KGB and Yasser Arafat for propaganda purposes. The power and the effectiveness of that propaganda we're seeing on campuses today.
What is Hamas, and how is it related to the people of the Palestinians, for lack of a better term?
Hamas is an acronym for the Islamic Resistance Movement. And the Islamic Resistance Movement is meant to destroy the state of Israel and create an Arab Muslim state on the territory that Israel is now in possession of. And the idea is based on Islam, beginning to end. Islam is a supremacist, aggressive, expansionist political ideology, as well as a religion. And Islam teaches in the Quran, the holy book of Islam, drive them out from where they drove you out. Now, that's a very simple statement, and a lot of people don't realize its implications. But the idea is that any land that was ruled by Islamic law at any point belongs by right to Muslims forever. And so the Holy Land, having been under the Ottoman Empire and the Arab Empire before that, belongs forever to Islam, as far as the Muslims who believe the Quran are concerned, because they think that they were consequently driven out, which is a half-truth at best, and that they consequently have this duty before Allah, the supreme being, to drive out those who supposedly drove them out. And so this is ultimately an eschatological, religious, spiritual conflict. And yet in the West, it is consistently and universally misinterpreted as being a political conflict that can be solved via negotiation. And this is why all those negotiations have failed.
When they keep talking about a two-state solution, what they're saying basically is that, okay, within the property that is now Israel, part of it should be for just the Israelis, and then another part should be just for the Palestinians, correct?
Well, that's the idea, sure. But the reality is that the Palestinians, so-called, will never allow for the existence of a Jewish state, even if it's the size of a parking lot, even if it's the size of a postage stamp. They will never accept the existence of Israel. And if a Palestinian state is created now, as the Biden administration and others want to do, it will not bring peace. It will only be used as another jihad base for renewed attacks against what remains of Israel. This is very clear from the passage of the Quran that I was just explaining. If you really believe that the Supreme Being has commanded you in a manner that is no less solemn than Christians take seriously the Ten Commandments to drive out the non-Muslims from the land, then you can only accept an Israeli state, a Jewish state, as a half measure that will allow you to fight against the rest of it and ultimately destroy that as well.
From the river to the sea, what does that phrase mean? And by the way, it's been used in some of these protests lately here in America.
It's interesting to note that from the river to the sea is something that those who chant it don't seem to be aware of what it means. As there, you know, you can readily find videos of people going up to the protesters and asking them, well, which river and which sea? And they give all these wild, wrong answers. They have no idea which river and which sea is involved. What the chant actually means is the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. Now, if you look at a map, you'll see that Israel is entirely between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. And so if you think that Palestine must be free from the river to the sea, what you're saying is you want to see the total destruction of Israel, which of necessity will result in the deaths of millions of Jews. And so the chant is frankly genocidal, but those who chant it are so ignorant of what they actually are doing and what they're involved with that many of them are out there screaming this without any idea of what they're really calling for.
That's amazing. By the way, a lot of these protesters, these are not all Muslims, of course. Many of them are just Marxists. To use a phrase from the late Rush Limbaugh, Marxist skulls full of mush. But in other words, they've drunk the Kool-Aid. They don't even know what they're protesting for in some ways, correct?
Yeah, exactly. The left has embraced the Palestinian cause as being one of a struggle against oppression on the part of an oppressed people, and what's more, supposedly a people of color as opposed to a white oppressor. And so it's been made to fit into the left's paradigm, and the left has taken it up enthusiastically. In reality, there's nothing really to this. The Israeli state is not oppressive. It has a 2 million Arab population, and they enjoy full equality of rights with the Jewish Israelis and serve in the Knesset and are in many, many key positions in the Israeli state. And the idea that Israel is some oppressive apartheid state is pure fiction and propaganda, but it's been aggressively taken up by these people and fit into their Marxist paradigm.
And these protests are very effective. I mean, they're all over the place. And, you know, it would be very hard to control some of this stuff. But I do have a question for you. I had never, until this conversation, it never even dawned on me. From the time of the Romans, when the Romans conquered the Jews, you know, 70 AD was the worst, then it was revisited about 110 or 115 and got real bad again. But, and I know Jews were driven out and so forth, but was there always a remnant of Jewish people living in what had been Israel and what is today Israel? And they, you know, from generation to generation, even through the time of the Crusades, even through the time of the Ottoman Empire, even through the 20th and now the 21st centuries.
Yeah, absolutely, Jerry. In my book, The Palestinian Delusion, I trace the history of this briefly, that there were always Jews in the Holy Land, that the Romans officially expelled them in the year 134 from the land of Judea, that is the land of the Jews, which they renamed Palestine at that time, taking the name from the Philistines, the ancient enemies of the Jews from the Bible. And the Jews always stayed there. Many of them left at the time that the Romans ordered them to leave, but many stayed. They were known as the Yeshuv and were still there in the 19th century when the Zionists began to move in and populate the area. You have many people, including the famous novelist Mark Twain, who went through the area and they encountered some Jews, but found it to be mostly a desolate and unpopulated area. It was when the Zionists began to come and establish businesses that many of the Arabs from the surrounding areas actually moved there in order to get jobs, because they knew that the Jews would bring jobs and economic prosperity. And what's more, the Ottomans were alarmed by the Jewish settlement, the Zionist settlement, and began forcing Arabs from the surrounding areas to move into this area. And so it's ironic now that a lot of these people who arrived after the Zionists are now considered the indigenous Palestinians. But if anybody is really indigenous to the land, it's the Yeshuv, the Jews who were always there from time immemorial, and were joined by their countrymen and who the co-religionists who had been in exile for all those years.
Wow, we have about 35 seconds left for this. You are so informative. I appreciate it. Jihadwatch.org is your website. How about as a closing thought, are all these protesters out on the college campuses that are, you know, frankly, they're anti-Semitic, do any of them recognize what happened on October 7th?
Well, a lot of them are happy about it and say so openly. What you have is quite a lot of Muslim students, and this is a result also of mass Muslim migration into the United States after 9/11. And they are openly, proudly proclaiming that they're pro-Hamas and in favor of October 7th. And of course, a lot of the leftists, because they've been taught, as Lenin said, in order to make an omelet, you have to break some eggs. They're on board with that as well.
Robert Spencer, thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry.